And hello, everybody. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca. Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam Donaldson. And co-hosting with me today, as usual, is...
Scotty Hertz. And to drop the first Simpsons reference of the year, I'm full of chocolate. Hope your holidays were great. Mine were definitely full of Rochers, among other things. So
you didn't do the German voice, though. Because that was
the German kid.
I'm full of chocolate.
I think we were told not to do accents on the air anymore. So, Well, not we, but the collective we. But anyway.
All right.
I'm full of the chocolate. How's that?
That wasn't terrible.
I've already ruined everything.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can listen to us live online on CFRU.ca as well. You just click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. So yeah, we hope everyone had a good holiday and good New Year and all that stuff, but we have serious stuff to talk about for this first show of the year, which as per usual is our annual award show. Now you may be saying, wait a minute, didn't you do an award show like a month ago? And yeah, we did. Thanks for pointing it out, jerk.
We're going to do one every month now. just to bug you.
Oh yeah. So we do this at the end of every year. We did one to celebrate 200 episodes a couple of weeks ago, but this is like for the year. So we're going to be very focused on this year with the awards.
Although it's probably a little bit of overlap.
There usually is. So worst politician, good news story, dumpster fire of the year, and best politician. Those are the categories. We also have, as a reminder to everyone, lifetime achievement rule for Donald Trump is in effect.
Yes, although he will probably make a guest appearance in at least one category.
He's definitely going to make a guest appearance in my first award for worst politician, because I'm giving it to not just one, but two people.
Ooh,
who are collectively called Javanka.
Ah.
Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump. Senior White House advisors whose jobs are unknowable, to say the least. These are kind of scummy people.
Was it Bannon came up with Javanka? I think so.
Must have been.
Yeah.
He's evil.
He's
clever.
Done, yeah. He did a solid on that one.
But yeah, they... I mean, Jared Kushner kind of gotten some praise recently because he was part of the whole criminal justice reform package that was just passed, which I guess if there's like one thing, one good thing he could have done that was a good one, is probably his only substantive contribution that didn't end in like an FBI investigation to this administration. Because the thing that gets me on top of it all is that it was these two cholos who suggested that Trump fire James Comey and that would solve all their problems, which always kills me when Trump goes off about the witch hunt and no collusion and all that. It's like, you want to blame someone for having Bob Mueller in your nightmares every night? Go to your idiot son-in-law and fire him, because he was like, hey Pop, why don't you fire Jim Comey and all your problems will go away. I don't know if that's what Jared Kushner sounds like.
I love that voice. Yeah, because he doesn't say too much publicly.
No, he's actually done like more press this year. And by more press, I mean he did like three interviews this year.
Hmm.
So, but in my head, that's what Jared Kushner sounds like. And that's why he never talks.
Hey, Pops.
Hey, Pops, I got a great idea. Let's sell ketchup popsicles on the nose stand.
He's a newsie from 1935.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Like. But yeah, I mean, it was also their idea to push out General Kelly, and that seemed to be personally motivated, because one of the things about General Kelly was he was trying to instill some kind of internal discipline in terms of like not having an open door policy at the Oval Office, and of course who suffered from that. And I think this was in Woodward's book, one of the books this year, that you know Ivanka would want to go talk to her father, and General Kelly be like, well, no, you can't like really just waltz in and talk to the president anytime you feel like it, because he's your daddy. And she's like, well, I'm Ivanka Trump, and
yeah,
I do what I feel like.
They made an appearance in both Fire and Fury and Fear, Bob Woodward's book and Michael Wolff's, so
yeah,
odds are really good that it's probably true,
based on a true story.
Yes.
My dislike of these two goes kind of deeper than that. First of all, you have Jared Kushner, who is tight with Mohammed bin Salman, and was evidently giving him tips on how to, you know, weather the whole killing a journalist thing. You have Ivanka Trump, who is a first of all, her at least Jared Kushner's role is nonsensical, but at least it's been defined. Her role seems to not exist at all. Her role seems to be just do like Ivanka stuff, which is hilarious because she was embroiled in a story that said that she was using a personal email to do White House business. That came out this year. It was revealed that she's made personally
crooked
made
Ivanka.
Yeah, she's personally made $10 million from the Trump DC hotel.
Oh.
So she's part of the grifting clan. There was the very recent dissolving of the Trump Foundation, which
implicated,
implicated her, that she's not allowed to serve on the board of any charities. And, I mean, Donald Trump probably doesn't care. Don Jr. probably doesn't care. Eric probably doesn't care. But for Ivanka's, like, image as, you know, a cosmopolitan woman who's a helper of women, that's got a sting because that definitely puts a pin in some of her image rehab she tries to do on a daily basis.
And being the first daughter, which I think Bannon didn't like that too much either because like he's like, that's BS that you're
I don't like it either.
The first daughter.
I don't like it either because there was she was doing some interview earlier this year where they asked her about, you know, being a someone who stands up for women and how does that jibe with the things that your father said, you know, the quote unquote Hollywood Access Hollywood tape. And she was like, I don't think that's a really fair question to ask a daughter. And it's like,
she
no.
does actually sound like that. Yes.
It's like, no, it's a fair yeah. question to ask a senior White House advisor, which is what you are. Like, sorry, if you want to be a first daughter, go and be a first daughter. You want to be a person, like, yeah, you don't take a paycheck, but that doesn't make you any less responsible to the people you're supposed to be working for.
Yeah, because other first daughters were generally not involved. I'm thinking the Obama kids.
Well, they were young.
Amy Carter. Yeah, yeah well, that. I mean, yeah, but still, there's no role. They're just, they just,
right,
they just live
yeah,
there.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, just no, it's, you're right. My runner-up is Andrew Scheer.
Yeah.
Because he let Bernier get away. I think that's going to burn him big time. He has no policy. He's just, I hate Justin and everything Justin does. He's, you know, he's Spalding Gray in a Rick Dees world.
Whoa.
It's, I mean, in terms of the conservative culture, it's going to be really hard for him to, you know, to stand out in the pack when you've got, you know, Jason Kenney in the West, you have Doug Ford in the East. You know, where does Andrew
Scheer, resistance is
rising. Where does quote-unquote Stephen Harper with a smile fit into that? And that's going to be really hard for him in the coming election.
It's not for lack of trying. I would make him my runner-up as well. Mm-hmm. But first prize, first place. And talking about overlap with our 200th show, but also what you just mentioned, Doug Ford. Doug Ford. Yeah.
Dofo.
All things Ford. Tabitha Southey put it really well. Talking about Ontario being open for, and in parentheses, the family business. The kind of nepotistic approach that we saw, I think that we saw shades of it at, I almost said Guelph City Council in Toronto, has come full bore, I think. We've talked about a lot of these things. It's almost hard to do a rundown
in
a mere 7 minutes. The OPP appointment, this claimed it was hands off. The secret police camper, keep it off the books, with the NDP calling for a full public inquiry. And he always makes these statements like, I've never received more this for that ever. It's always, I've never received more phone calls about this ever, about anything. That's when he veers into Trump territory. Not quite as Trumpy, but, you know, he's like, more people calling about this. Here's my cell phone number. You can call me. Like, it's just borderline ridiculous stuff, right? Mm-hmm. The guy ran on, and his party, ran on pretty much no policy, lower taxes, lower gas, buck a beer. Helped in no small part by Ontario Proud, corporately funded, as we've found out, Ontario Proud.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You want to talk about fake news outfit, little populist thingies. it's, you know, we're in the realm of the ridiculous, I think. I mean, you knew, people knew what was coming. They elected this guy, you know. things that have surfaced too, like the, you know, the courtship with the people saying, oh yeah, we'll open up the green belt. And then he's like, no, we won't open up the green belt. And then and now it's like, yeah, we're going to open up the green belt.
it's just get like, whiplash.
Yeah, yeah. This is typical stuff. You know, you talk about the liberals and whoever else and the NDP who ruined everything. What is it now? 30 years ago?
Yeah.
That's like saying it's Trudeau Senior's fault that everything's gone for a dump, right? The guy's been
it's crazy
gone for
because,
20 years.
No, it's crazy. The people are still hooked on it. And it's not even like people who live through Ray Days. It's like the kids of people who live through Ray Days.
Yeah.
Are like, we're not going to vote for the NDP. Remember Ray Days? No. How do you remember Ray Days? You weren't even born.
I do. I thought a couple of days off was actually not too bad, but that's just me. Yeah, and very unhealthy, I think, too, is the dose of fundamentalist conservatism that's there these days. I think we can call it that.
Yeah.
The influence of the religious, and they are fundamentalists. There's no two ways about that. And also being friendly or at least playing footsie with the fash. I'm thinking in particular Faith Goldie and the gang. Mm. Ford's never out and out said, you know, he's still getting his picture taken with her, and he's never actually said, I don't think he said outright, it's like, no, you know, the stuff she believes I don't actually support at all. So he's not, there's been no outright disowning of Faith Goldie and company.
It took like a week to get basically even just a little bit of pushback.
Yeah.
That we don't agree with.
And I'm sure it's probably one of the Harper holdover handlers behind the scenes saying, Doug, you better say something because it's like, I shouldn't have to say anything. The big scoop of petty stuff with Toronto City Council, that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Fiasco. As turning out, it isn't going to save any money. All these initiatives he's coming up with, like the carbon tax slash whatever you want to call it, or saving money at Toronto City Council by slashing it to half its size, and then it turns out that they're going to need a bunch of cash to do anything resembling a job. No money saved there, realistically. Pretty vindictive stuff, too.
Yeah.
And, of course, we're seeing bit by bit the cuts that are happening piece by piece, which we've talked about at length. The pissing off the Francophone community in Ontario. We're seeing cuts to the schools.
The environmental commissioner.
This is an endless list, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is what was called when they were elected the first government of the people of Ontario. I think the more people that are going to get PO'd with what he's doing, I think the more we're going to see pushback. That may end up being the story of 2019. I think that, you know, you chip away enough at various people. I think we've seen the tests, I think. In 2018, we saw the testing of the waters. It's like, we cut this, we cut that. And then, you know, they make excuses for the cuts that have no basis. Well, they're wasting money. It's like, with no proof. Like, so just cut this, cut that, cut the other thing. When you PO enough people, it's going to, you know, will there be people wearing whatever color vest in the streets? I don't know. We may see something like that. This is me doing the, you know, predictions for 2019. But they're off to, I would call it not a rocky start, but they're off to an auspicious start, I suppose. And if we're going to see more of, well, we are going to see more of, you know, what's happened already in 2018. So, yeah, I think we're probably going to be talking about this guy every week or some extension of what's going on provincially. Yeah. We may have to give them the award.
There may be another lifetime achievement award
to remove him from the pool of people that we can yak about. So
yeah. Okay, well, that brings us to the next category, which is the good news story of the year. And actually, I'm glad you mentioned Faith Goldie, because that sort of plays into my good news story, which is the deplatforming of alt-right media people. So this year we saw the tech companies finally take action on Alex Jones. He was deplatformed from Facebook, Twitter, and Apple, and YouTube as well. So Google also took action.
All the big players, really.
All the big players. I mean, it probably too little too late. I heard this on the Reliable Sources podcast that, you know, the DNA of InfoWars and Alex Jones has already kind of been disseminated through different outlets on the internet. Although, from what I understand, Alex Jones does still have Instagram access.
Oh.
Instagram, of course, is owned by Facebook.
But he hasn't gone underground. Like,
no, he's been doing like basically publicity stunts. Like, there was a one where he like confronted Marco Rubio at the Capitol.
little markup.
And yeah, a little markup profanity, like he didn't know who Alex Jones was and tried to like laugh him off.
That's deplatforming of a sort, isn't it? Just
a little bit.
Who's this clown, huh?
There's also Milo Yiannopoulos, who was reported that he's $2 million in debt, and he went on Facebook and said, actually, that's fake news. I'm $4 million in debt.
But it's even worse.
But, I mean, this comes from last year when he was lost his job at Breitbart. His book was canceled. He was deplatformed, and now he's $4 million in debt. So, you know, couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
He says in jest.
But then there's also in Canada we have Faith Goldie too. Now, people may remember that she was fired from Rebel Media. Then she tried to do her own thing, tried to crowdfund for I think it was through Patreon, and they weren't having any of it. And then she eventually decides to run for mayor, in an effort to stay relevant, and she does.
Comes in third place.
One third place, yeah. But then she tried to buy ad time on CP24. Bell Media refused to air her ads. She took them to court, which was a stupid move because she really should have took them to the CRTC. But, I mean, I don't think that was about actually trying to get her ads on TV. I think it was about promoting Faith Goldie.
I'm going to sue. Yeah, everything's about promoting Faith Goldie. Yeah.
And the judge came back with a decision like, no, CTV was in, or Bell Media was within its rights not to air your ad.
Free speech.
Right, and so she was also ordered to pay the legal fees of Bell Media, which comes to something like $45,000, and she also had about $45,000 in legal fees for about a total $100,000 in legal fees. So what does she do? She goes to GoFundMe to raise the money to pay for her legal fees, and GoFundMe deplatforms her after about 3 hours, ending her attempt to raise funds. And she has no idea why. It's like, well, I think the rest of us know why, Faith. 88, right? 14 words, right,
yeah,
Faith?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it shows that there is a way to combat these people, combat them often, combat them early, combat them often by not giving them a platform. The tech companies have been far too slow in saying or are really not doing anything at all to try and stop this, which is why the Alex Jones thing was so infuriating. It actually took, I think it was Apple that first pulled his podcast, but left up his app. And Alex Jones, I mean. They pulled the podcast, left up the app, but then that started the cascade effect of it just, you know what? Yes, there's free speech, but unless we're going to change the way these things are regulated to make them like proper sort of more in the line of utilities like TV, like radio, mm-hmm. These are private companies that still choose not to act, or at least they have started to choose to act in these specific cases. So I hope that continues to keep up because these people are toxic. They are in it only for themselves, and they're irreparably damaging the culture. It's also on the fault of the people who Faith Goldie puts up a thing that says, help me raise money for the legal funds for the suit I brought. And people are like, here, Faith, here's some of my money. And I think a lot of this is probably driven by incel people who think they have a shot.
There's a bit of that going on. I get that, you know, not following them particularly intensely, but, you know, I think they're all going to be reduced to being pamphleteers on the corner soon, so, in ragged clothing.
Well, there was that woman, that alt-right woman who chained herself to the front doors of Twitter when they kicked her off.
Yeah. but then again, you know, the police didn't drag her away right away. She had probably a good hour to go. Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. My runner-up is the Democrats taking back the House, by the way.
Yes, that would probably qualify as a sign of hope.
Anyway, your good news story.
I struggled a bit with this. I really did.
Because there's little good news.
Well, it was one of those years. And I'm thinking, no, there's nothing that stands out. You know, there's no found the wallet story, you know. Like, found the wallet and it was returned and it had $1,000 in it. I'm going to go with pot legalization.
Okay.
And not to publicly or anything back the liberals because people know how I roll. Because it's been a bit of a bureaucratic mess, particularly in Ontario with the, you know, the conservatives, aforementioned conservatives chucking a wrench into all things liberal, whether they're provincial or federal. So I'm not sure if the fact that we don't have the shops everywhere And it's only available by mail. Is them running interference, or is it just that they don't have their act together? The good news part of the story is, I think, was the amount of indifference the whole thing was kind of met with. We talked about this the day that pot was legal. I happened to be off. I wasn't feeling so hot, and I was watching, you know, because it was getting – I think they were expecting all this – these big stories to come out of people buying pot on the first day.
They're expecting reefer madness.
Reefer, exactly.
They're expecting people to start bashing their dealers' heads in. And,
there's – yeah. There's been a guillotine out in the streets. The there's been a bit of reefer madness-style critique, as we saw locally with the health department head at council saying, well, we really need to take a step. How many times have we heard that really need to take a step back? We've been hearing that for like 70 or 80 years or something, right? So we can't do this, we can't do that. And it's pretty much, I wouldn't say it's been summarily ignored, but fairly close. Mm-hmm. The biggest improvement that they could make to the good news story, because there won't be any further offenses, I guess, charged unless you're in violation of the new law. For simple possession, there are a lot of people with charges in this country that should probably be expunged completely. Mm-hmm. The numbers that I got were something to the effect of, I think it was like 15,000 charged and 2,000 convicted since the Trudeau government came to be. So between them getting elected and legalization, something to the tune of 103,000 charged since 2013. And 500,000 Canadians have a record of some kind that involves simple possession offense. And the problem with this is that, of course, as we know, it can make things more difficult, a.k.a. that thing on every job application that says, have you ever been convicted of a criminal offense?
Right.
You have to say yes.
Yeah.
When in actual fact, in 2019 now, it's not really a criminal offense anymore. Lots of things are delisted and aren't criminal anymore, and people are pardoned. And the problem with this one is that, of course, as we know, the people charged with offenses like this are more likely to be Black or Indigenous, and the punishments tended to be more strict, I think. Mm-hmm. The judgment passed was more strict. So that needs to be – they need to work on that for sure. There's been some – I think it was coming from the NDP, among others, that there needs to be – you know, the record needs to be made set straight now that possession isn't a problem. I mean, there's still obviously laws to be followed, and, you know, we're Canada in that we're a little more small L liberal, but there's still significant laws in terms of the amount you can have, how many plants you can grow, and you can't just sell it. You just have to give it away, which is... That's pure socialism, growing your pot plants, giving them to somebody. I don't know about it. So it's a good news story, I think. It's definitely the butt of a lot of jokes that come up from the states where people are talking about moving here. They'll be like, yeah, they've got weed. Weed is legal everywhere now. Even though some of the states were ahead.
Yeah.
Colorado particularly. Obviously, the whole nation to the south is not. But I would call it a good news story. And as I said, because I struggled this, I don't really have a runner-up. And I haven't had a dube yet, by the way. I don't know. I gave some people the impression that I'm some kind of heavy-duty stoner.
That's funny.
I should tell people. I mean, like anybody, the biggest thing for me, and I think something good that comes out of this, is quality control.
Right.
Because back in the day... I won't get into too much detail, but at one point, it was one of those dupe being passed around at a party, and I didn't realize that the high test stuff was starting to come online. So weed has been bred now, where it's like there's this super intense stuff, whereas I was used to the backyard stuff from my neighbors. We'll leave it at that. But it was, you know, there's a difference between the sort of random plant with seeds that have been grown years and years, like tomatoes, let's say. And then there's the stuff that comes from under a lamp that's been bred and bred and bred for,
potency.
High potency and high chemistry, right? So at least with this setup, you can now look at percentages, like you look at the calorie listing at Five Guys or whatever and say, oh, it's got this much TSC or it's got this much active ingredient. Quality control, very, very important in my book. Especially for health reasons, or you need to know whether your mind's going to be completely blown or you're just going to be sort of like mellow yellow. So anyway, that's a positive thing as well. I know a lot of people will argue against
it. That was quite the journey.
There you go. So I guess I can say it now because I'm not going to get charged with anything.
Yeah.
I was never a heavy doper, but, you know, I was definitely in the realm.
You can never say never because there was that woman in Northern Ontario who was charged with witchcraft 2 days before that law expired.
Yeah, I think that was just to say, oh, let's get one more in, but...
Maybe.
It's witchcraft.
It's...
But she couldn't be charged with possession, so there you go. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's... The shame of it is that... I think that it wasn't handled particularly with care. Like,
no.
There's still a bit of that reefer madness stuff, whether that you see that on Guelph City Council, whether you see that in sort of the way the federal government handled it. It's okay, we're just going to, like, pass it off to the province. You guys do whatever you want.
Classic move, right? Oh, right. We don't take the whole heat for it.
And so. Then there's, like, 10 different standards from coast to coast about, you know, how many stores, how many, you know, what's available. It just seemed like such a slapdash. I don't think it was what was promised. And then the back end of it, on the day cannabis is legalized, to say, you know what, now we're going to look back at all those people that we've been, like, that were charged up until yesterday.
Yeah.
With possession for this thing that's now legal. It leaves a bit of a sour taste in your mouth. But, I mean, progress is progress, so we'll
and
see.
And Guelph is surrounded by places that aren't allowing the sales.
That's true.
We might actually become a, you know, tourist stop like Denver, where people will come here and buy their weed at the one store that we might get because it's been capped at 25. Right, so maybe it will be the Color Your World on Stone Road. There's a super local reference for our listeners that are nowhere near here, but the old paint store was supposed to be the weed shop, and that may still happen, but it's all speculative.
The OCS, yeah.
Speculative at this point, because I don't know whether they're going to give out the licenses in terms of population or they're saying lottery. So, I mean, you know, the store could end up in, I don't know, Sault Ste. Marie.
So you could have
something.
No stores in Toronto, but like a store in, yeah, like the Sioux or Thunder Bay.
Or all stores in Toronto and you know, one up in Blind River. Who knows?
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
Well, we'll take a break there on that note, and we'll come back with our next two awards. You're listening to Open Sources here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
That was Fox Warren from their latest release, self-titled. The album is called Fox Warren. They're from Saskatchewan. And the song was called Fall Into a Dream. New into the station. We like to play stuff that's new into the station. Fresh sounds from our nation.
Fresh sounds. Good prairie boys.
And girls, I guess. Peeps.
That's three, four. Oh, no, there is a lady in the band. Two ladies.
The team.
It's like an eight-person band.
The team of peeps.
Sure.
All bands are teams now.
It's
okay.
So
weird.
Whatever
you say hurts.
Go sometimes. All right. So that brings us to our next category, which is the dumpster fire of the year. Always a popular category.
You get a flame sound effect when they do that. Burning log sound.
Yeah.
Explosions. Yes.
Anyway, I went first last time. Why don't you go first this time?
The dumpster fire of the year, ongoing before and after 2018, is the hate on for journalists, and particularly the ones that have been killed covering or attempting to report certain stories.
Mm-hmm.
There was a report out at the end of last year from Reporters Without Borders. They were saying in 2018 there was 63, as they call them, professional journalists killed, and 80 total when you add up all the media, which includes citizen journalists and people that, you know, let's say assistants or whatever, people assisting in the journalistic pursuit, right? And they figure that 49 of them were deliberately targeted about for what they were doing. In particular, Khashoggi is, mm-hmm. is probably the number one example of somebody who was killed, ordered to be killed, because of what he was reporting. And we've obviously talked about that as well. There's 348 journalists detained worldwide. Turkey, NATO ally Turkey tops the charts in terms of how many journalists are detained. I believe it, half of them are in Turkey alone. Egypt second, China, Saudi, Iran. The enemies of press freedom are legion. So that's not getting any better and not helping, of course, and here's where the Donald will make an appearance. Although it's written in the American Constitution, Constitution of the United States, about freedom of the press. It's like one of their top amendments to their Constitution. He is one of the worst for fueling the hatred of journalists.
Yeah.
The man that pretty much patented or should copyright the term fake news, which has entered the lexicon and will never, like, we've got that for life now. Just insulting people, being demeaning to journalists. And I happen to, in the research, see that image again. It's sort of making the rounds with the Canadian yellow jacket or yellow jersey protests with Trudeau being hung by a noose. There's that rope tree journalist, a famous T-shirt somebody took a shot of at a Trump rally,
yeah,
pre-election rally in 2016. Not helping. And there was that other guy that was screaming USA at the journalists when Trump did one of his turn around and look at them all, and then it's 2 minutes hate straight out of 1984.
Yeah.
They've been grabbed, harassed, choked, tossed around. It doesn't pay to be a journalist at a Trump rally openly, yeah, in the corral there, because they will go after you. Mm-hmm. So that none of that is helping. That's sort of a smaller example of the bigger problem, as I was mentioning before, where in other countries they just call you in, or they'll just kill you, or they'll just torture you just because you're trying to report a story. So, I mean, as we know, the whole thing, journalism in general, is being diminished, I think, in a lot of ways by the rise of the internet. It's improved journalism in some areas, but in others, in terms of, you know, not, and I was going to say not having a specific news organization to work for, but even they, you know, when Trump takes a jab at people, say, you know, the New York Times or the Bezos Washington Post, or he doesn't hesitate to go after the journalism establishment as well, even though he probably, if he does read anything, he probably does read the New York Times.
He's obsessed with the New York Times because...
Yeah. And he watches a bunch of, you know, Fox News aside, which is his, I consider his channel, he's always after CNN, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to call CNN fake news just because they're not... And I think it sort of fueled their reporting as well, in terms of like, well, if you're going to talk like that about us, we're going to tell them about this, this, and this, and this. It's not... I mean, they're not fake news,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Fake news is like that, the German journalist who was making up stories and gave back
right,
his awards,
yeah,
which was a story in late 2018 as well. That's fake news. And, of course, there's tons of, you know,
well, and that
Alex Jones we talked about before.
That doesn't help the overall.
News. The frogs, you know, that, are changing their sex.
That,
you know,
this guy was, this guy in Germany was for, like, a reputable paper, too.
Yeah.
And I mean, that doesn't help.
And, yeah, most there have been the stories that have come out where there are people, you know, fudging their stories or just
or that they get details wrong in the stories. Yeah. And I mean, that doesn't help. Although I would put, you know, at least newspapers will come out and correct mistakes. Donald Trump will not. Donald Trump will not issue corrections when he says wrong things.
No, there's no sorry. He's unable to say it. So, yeah, that's definitely an ongoing dumpster fire. Is there any remedy to it? I don't think so. I think it's kind of always been with us that, you know, some people that are out to tell the story, that there's always people out to get them to some degree. And
the difference, though, this time is that there is a counter media culture that will feed the beast, that will exploit the bubble. And I think that's the problematic part, is people can choose their news now, that if you're not... If you think CNN or MSNBC or the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal are fake news, you'll find like ScreamingEaglePatriotNews.net, and they will feed your needs.
Some guy with a basement blog.
Yeah.
It's all real. It's all true. So
right.
So you need to, everybody needs to get their filters on and figure out.
That sort of feeds into my dumpster fire, which is everything that's happened at Facebook this year.
Oh, yeah.
That this company... which has made itself such an essential part of our lives.
Almost inescapable.
Almost inescapable. Although, you know, people are escaping, and, you know, good for them. If I didn't need, unfortunately, Guelph's a Facebook town.
Yeah.
I kind of need Facebook to drive people to my site, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. It would be hard for me otherwise to convince me to stick around. I mean, there's also people I've been connected to for years through Facebook who I wouldn't want to lose connection with.
Exactly.
But, yeah, I mean, they've sort of built this, like, dependency machine.
Well, that's how they suck you. It's how they suck you in with that.
Yeah.
And then it goes off into the realm of, like, really?
But, yeah. like, consider this. Facebook has lost $17.3 billion in value this year because of all their scandals.
Hmm.
And they have been numerous. And Business Insider actually had, like, a rundown of the scandals, like, by month. That's how big the scandals have been this year.
Almost at a Trump level.
Yeah, yeah. Just about. But, so there was the revelation at the beginning of the year that... they were going to focus on more on changing the algorithm, that you get more hits from your friends and your family and not so much from, you know, pages, which hurt a lot of journalistic endeavors, because a lot of journalistic papers and internet sites and TV and all that had, like, geared their sort of advertising to drawing people in from social media. So that hurt them. There was, the scandal about they knew more about Russia interference than earlier on than originally thought, and that in fact they'd actually hired Cambridge Analytica to, or not Cambridge Analytica, but they hired a Republican-friendly Oppo outfit to actually smear George Soros and to actually go out there and go to bat for Facebook. So they were using the very same tactics they were being accused of allowing online, and were, like, crying crocodile tears. You know, there have been several interviews with Mark Zuckerberg this year, and he's been typically shy about media appearances. He's not, like, a great spokesperson for this thing he's created, but no. He's been doing a lot of press this year.
He looks increasingly pale with every appearance, right?
Yeah, and he's, you know, they actually were able to drag him up in front of Congress to testify to. You have scandals involving, like, Libya and the Philippines. The government's there using Facebook to find dissenters and, like, pre-crime arresting them.
Mm-hmm.
You have hacks all over the place. There was a big security hack where they think about 30 million users were compromised. You had them trying to do more transparency on political ads. And Vice did an investigative report where they were able to post ads in the name of Mike Pence and ISIS, and nobody at Facebook bothered. No, they were two different ads, one for Mike Pence, one for ISIS, and Facebook didn't flag it at all. It went through. There was the latest scandal, which is about Facebook allowing access to user data, allowing outfits like the Royal Bank of Canada to edit people's personal messages.
That was a weird list.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's just, like, scandal after scandal after scandal. I realize that Mark Zuckerberg created it, but he and Sheryl Sandberg and everybody else, they have lost utter and complete control of this. I think we saw in Europe them kind of bringing in regulation. I think Canada has to do the same. I think the United States has to do the same. We can't pretend these are private corporations with a private platform to do what they want anymore. These are public utilities. This is how people get information about events in their area. This is how people network. This is how people get news. We can't trust Mark Zuckerberg to police this thing he created, because he had no idea what it is he's created. And I think he's only starting to come to terms with that this year. And we're too far. We can't wait for Mark Zuckerberg to catch up, especially when you look at when the tech companies, like this Google CEO, when they appear before Congress, and you have Steve King going, "Why are there so many negative stories about me on Google?" It's like, have you ever heard yourself talk?
Yeah.
You know, it just, we've seen that several times when tech company executives have appeared before Congress. It's just a bunch of old guys trying to understand something that's about that. I mean, this is basically like bringing someone from 1605 and showing them a train.
The quill pen.
Yeah. This is like, let me show you this
from
train, you know, Elizabeth the First. It doesn't compute. It's an entirely different technology. It's an entirely different way of thinking.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's unavoidable at this point. I think the companies are actually themselves bracing for regulation. I hope coming because I think Europe is leading the way on this.
Yeah, and people need to realize that the free thing isn't free. Yeah. And one of the key differences now with, and I'm going to say with this generation, is in terms of privacy and data, they don't care. The last vestiges of people caring about just sort of giving all their information randomly to somebody doesn't, I wouldn't say it doesn't matter anymore, but it's just accepted now that you're going to give something up of that is yours to get an app or some sort of convenience.
It's even more insidious than that.
Oh, it's yeah.
People are volunteering to be made product.
You are the product, yeah.
Right. You know, you're creating content. You're creating content for free for Facebook mm-hmm. that they can then sell advertising for. And then they are also gathering all that information you are giving them and selling it to people who want your information so they can sell you things. Facebook is treating you like a product. And
which you are. But
yeah.
I'm just going to give people a hot tip, which I learned years ago because I was in IT years ago. It was a different world, positively prehistoric. Like showing Elizabeth first a train. don't put anything on your pages or message people that you wouldn't say to their face.
Yeah.
And just, you know, you don't really have to put your whole existence on there. It's not, I wouldn't say I started off doing that because I never did. That was an important lesson somebody taught me years ago. It's like, you know, if you wouldn't say it to somebody, you probably shouldn't be putting it out there. So
no.
Because the Libyan government might come after, or whoever, right?
It's the Libyans.
You know,
they found me.
It isn't
private. I don't know how, but they found me.
It may be free, but it isn't private. So if you have any concerns about privacy, then you should be mindful of that in terms of what you're putting out there.
My runner-up was the QAnon stuff and the conspiracy. It's hilarious to watch these people try to make sense of this. Like there was a QAnon update that Michael Flynn was going to, or that Michael Flynn pled guilty so that he can go into court and disclose all this knowledge about the secret conspiracy, mm-hmm. which of course didn't happen when Michael Flynn was in court. It's just this crazy thing. It's sick. It's sick is what it is, but it's a dumpster fire too. So
absolutely.
Anyway.
Keep the fire extinguishers handy.
Let's get back to something positive, which is the best politician of the year.
My pick?
Yeah, you.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Ah, yes.
And it's not because she's a lefty. I'll get that out there right off the bat. What I find interesting about her is that she has been really willing and able to challenge the perceived, let's say, the alternative to all things Trump. Mm-hmm. In that she even though she's within the Democratic Party, she identifies as a Democratic Socialist. She's a working class person from the Bronx. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. She's not afraid to go after the Democratic machine that people had lots of issues with, in particular with Hillary. Hillary was the presumptive person that was supposed to win everything and make everything great. Not necessarily make America great again, but to, you know, she had it in the bag and didn't win. I've never actually heard her talking about specifically about Hillary, but her first, she's changing her, not changing, but she's just behaving as if she normally would. But now that she's in Congress, like her first day in Congress, she went to Nancy Pelosi's office and was involved with a sit-in. Nancy Pelosi is her own people, by the way, mm-hmm. Regarding climate change and that the perception among a lot of people is that America needs a Green New Deal in terms of taking care of climate change. So she's not afraid to challenge her own established behavior within her party. She beat a well-entrenched Democrat. I think he was the chair of the Democratic caucus, Joe Crowley. He'd been been a congressman for 20 years, something like that. That alone was a major upset enough. But the fact that she is in Congress now and taking a lot of flack, too, like that ridiculous argument about, well, she doesn't look like a girl who struggles because she's nicely dressed, even though it sounds like some of her clothes.
She wasn't wearing an old barrel.
No. Some of her clothes are rentals or borrowed. And, of course, the guy, you know, took a picture of her from behind, which sort of implies that, like, you know, it's just.
He was ogling her.
Yeah. It's not right. And that, you know. it's she's just refusing to accept the way things are done. Because I think there's a lot of that. Well, that's not the way things are done around here, little lady. We actually do it like this. Not afraid to challenge that. And I think that's probably her biggest strength. And I think it's also will be an inspiration to certain people that lean that way as well and saying, well, we want change, but we want to be able to change ourselves and our own structures along with Congress and all things. I was going to say Parliament, but all things, all things from the White House on down, the three-ring government that America has.
Right,
not quite a circus, but the three rings being the judiciary, Parliament, and the Parliament. I did it again, and the presidency,
legislative, so, executive, and judiciary.
Yes, there we go. Yeah. It's been a long time since history class. Adam, I can't
apparently
remember nothing. But so. Yeah, she's probably one of the ones to watch in the new sitting of the Congress in 2019, this year.
I mean, she's already kind of gotten under the skin of people on the right who are looking for a new woman to hate now that Hillary Clinton's sort of retired to be a Long Island grandmother.
Oh, but she might be back in 2020.
I somehow doubt it.
I do too, but you never know.
I mean, I wouldn't put it past the Clintons to ingratiate themselves by doing some campaigning. But I hope that
Chelsea going to be the candidate. No, I don't.
So my winner for best politician this year is the one you chose for best politician for the 200 show, which was Mike Schreiner.
Huh.
I was saving it for the year end because this was the year. Decisive victory on election night with 46%, almost 46% of the vote. 45.04. Which is the biggest margin since Brenda Elliott won in 1999.
Oh, wow.
Also, now that I'm thinking about it, when I was thinking about this last night, last time a conservative won in Guelph, too. 1999, almost
it's
20 years.
It's that long ago, eh?
Yeah.
Hmm.
So, yeah. So, you know, Mike did the hard work. He was pretty much in campaign mode here for 4 years, making himself known, talking to people, having meetups, going to different groups, different events, making hot dogs at the Labor Day picnic.
Yeah. The snap Guelph theory of politics of Guelph.
So right. I know that there are some people who want to downplay it, like, oh, well, Guelph's out of the game for 4 years because we have a guy who's a caucus of one. And there's also the criticism that, you know, because he's a party leader, he's more focused on provincial stuff than Guelph stuff. I don't think that's the case. And I've sort of seen that firsthand. He's very intently focused on being a good constituent MPP. But yeah, I mean, he does have broader responsibilities too. And the attention is good. He's getting quoted and people are seeking him for quotes and not just environmental stuff.
Exactly. I noticed that right off the bat and that they go, he seems to be the go-to person even beyond
John Fraser
and Andrea Horvath. It's like right in there, a line or two, but every single time it's like, you know, Green Party leader Mike Schreiner says this, even though he is really realistically a party of one at this point.
Right. But there are times when there's a story about some Ford scandal and they'll talk to Andrea Horvath or they'll talk to one of her deputies and they'll skip over a liberal voice and go to Mike,
mm-hmm.
which should tell you the power Mike has, first of all, but also where the liberals are in terms of position. Although,
well, Fraser's interim, right?
Fraser's the interim leader, but, you know, they've got to rebuild the party mm-hmm. to win more than 7 seats in the next election. So he should be making himself more known, or maybe it's like a media bias thing. It's like, we don't want to talk to Frey because he's interim, like you said. I also don't think, like a lot of people have been like Guelph, you know, the government's not going to pay attention. Well, Doug Ford had Cam Guthrie down for a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Cam was one of 7 mayors he met with. We're still getting news about the Kitchener GO line, which goes through Guelph. That's not small potatoes either. So, you know, this area isn't like being ignored by the government. It seems, you know, I would argue that actually with Mike being MPP, we get more attention. You know, we also made history, which I don't think is something that should be sneezed at. It's
no, absolutely.
And like I said too, I think he's striking the right balance. He does have that provincial attention. He's been using that well. But also, a lot of people are very excited to have Mike as MPP. He's very visible, very active. A lot of people are looking for meetings with him. A lot of people are looking to, you know, have him come by to their events.
And an accessible guy too. He's been accessible. On our show quite a bit.
Yes, very true.
But yeah, and I think the question is with Mike and the Greens in general, not just at the provincial level, is this going to translate into more seats? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It has in other provinces. We've seen it in BC. They're holding the balance of power in BC right now. So that mm-hmm. that's the great question. And I guess it's one of those time will tell things. You know, will Mike's election, as historic as it was, translate into more Greens getting elected across the province? And that remains to be seen. The burning question.
I mean, I think we'll have a better idea next year after we see the PEI election, mm-hmm. which right now the PEI Greens are ahead in the polls.
So they may actually be the government.
It's not, mind you, PEI is inconceivable, but I mean, well, still, it starts somewhere.
Small potatoes.
Confederation started in PEI.
Very true.
So you never know. But that is going to be the next test. I'm not sure. I mean, Elizabeth May has a seat, but given what happened in 2015, I think there might have to be new leadership there if the Greens are going to expand their hold beyond just Sandwich Gulf Islands. Nothing against Elizabeth May, but...
yeah, her it hasn't really translated federally. Well, I guess with so much other stuff going on in
but
terms
it might
of
be...
wanting to get rid of Harper and...
Right.
I guess Trudeau and company playing green as well.
But it might be a different
matter.
But then
they bought a pipeline and that's...
Right. But it might be a different matter in Ontario because, you know, Ford will have burned out a lot of people by 2022. What state will the Liberals be in? I don't know. NDP, as we pointed out either earlier in the show or the other show we did last week.
It's all a blur.
It's all a blur at this point. But, you know, people are still holding Ray Days against the NDP. More people in other places may be looking for the alternative. And it may be possible this time in 4 years we may have a green caucus beyond one person.
Maybe we'll have Green Days and the bus is free on a Friday.
That'd be nice, actually. Although I do buy a bus pass. So once after I take 20 trips on the bus, it's free anyway.
You're as green as they come, Donaldson. I'll tell you what.
Maybe I should run for the Green Party.
Wow, maybe.
Probably not.
You never know, right?
I think that's a big stretch.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for the award show. And, I mean, although technically this is the first show of the new year, that's typically the wrap-up of the year that was.
And the lead-in to the year to come.
Pretty much. But yeah, so it'll be another big year because we have a federal election coming up. And
full coverage here on CFRU.
Yes, and we're going to try and have more friends from the city council back. We'll try to have Mike back. We'll try and get Lloyd in at some point soon. And
any of you politicians that are listening, you're more than welcome to join us. So
year five.
Let us know.
We're not going away. Year five.
No, year five.
Yeah.
Wow. It's our fifth birthday. Wow.
We're five. Anyway.
Gotta get a cake.
We're five today because it would be...
It was the kickoff show, so hard to believe.
Hard to believe. Our website is opensourcesguelph.com. You can go to our Twitter at @OS_Guelph, and you can find this and past episodes of the show on Podbean, the Guelph Politicast channel, or subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. You can find me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson or go to GuelphPolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spanderbook.wordpress.com. And we're ridiculously easy to find when you fire all those things off.
Absolutely.
Show, so you'll find us.
Could just Google us, whatever.
And listen to us on this 93.3.
Yes, and we'll be back live and in person next week with more news and stuff. Stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and we'll be back here next week with more open sources in the future. Dun, 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 dun.